founder of Charya, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. I'll start by reading the homage I wrote. Prabhupada's humility. Sometimes someone would address Lord Chaitanya as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord would block his ears and say, "Vishnu, Vishnu, Vishnu, I am just an ordinary living entity. Do not address me as God." He did not like the implication where Mayavadi sannyasis addressed each other as Narayan. Similarly, Srila Prabhupada did not like being addressed as a pure devotee. "How do you know that I am a pure devotee?" He did not like sentimental assertions. He always described himself as a humble servant of his spiritual master, Om Vishnupad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj. His claim was that he had 100% faith in his spiritual master as a representative of Krishna. He even once said in my hearing, "I do not know Krishna, I only know my Guru Maharaj." So he was very humble. But he defended himself in comparison to other swamis, yogis and impersonalists. Once when another swami's name was mentioned, Prabhupada said, "But what is his realization?" As a humble servant of his Guru Maharaj, he was better than all imitators, professional holy men, and those who do not accept the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That much he would boldly declare. A kick on their faces with boots. He was humble, like Hanuman, depicted as kneeling on one knee with his hands in pranams before Lord Rama, but ready to fiercely attack the Rakshasas or non-believers. Other spiritual movements are known primarily by the name of their founder, such as the Ramakrishna Mission, but Prabhupada kept himself in the background and propagated the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. When challenged as to his miraculous powers, he said he had none. He said his only power was the chanting of Hare Krishna and speaking the Bhagavad Gita as it is, by which he was converting leches, uncivilized men, into Vaishnavas. A tall claim, but one that he personally, but not one that he personally took credit for. "Who knew that you would come to me? Who knew that I would come to you? It is all Krishna's arrangement." The Hare Krishna movement grew by Lord Chaitanya's blessings, not by any personal magic of Prabhupada, he said. After the disappearance of his Guru Maharaj and demise of the Gaudiya Math, his godbrothers had become entangled in a fight to possess the temples. But Prabhupada, without any support, had preached sincerely, and he saw the results as the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. He said he was not a great scholar or a great devotee. He wrote that he was crippled in so many ways that he didn't think he had a hope for going back to Godhead. But if one of his disciples could become a pure devotee, then he could carry Prabhupada back to Godhead, just as Dhruva Maharaj carried his mother back to the spiritual world. That was his humble estimation of his standing before the Lord. Prabhupada wrote in a Vyas Puja offering that he had no hope of direct service to the Lord for many crores of births, but what he aspired for was the service of his Guru Maharaj. That is his glory and his qualification as a direct servant of the Lord. He worked tirelessly to spread Krishna consciousness throughout the world, and he allowed his disciples to address him in his prana mantra as being very dear to Krishna in this world, having taken shelter of the lotus feet of the transcendental world. He places himself at the lotus feet and tells his disciples they may take shelter of him, though he sees himself as an insignificant beggar, Abhay Charan Das. We have this wonderful book, Srila Prabhupada Tributes, which Jaya Dwaita Maharaj has inspired and pushed, which contains homages by all the Prabhupada's disciples, regardless of their affiliation with ISKCON or their position. As long as they're disciples of Prabhupada, they're entitled to write an homage and be printed in this book. It's a very wonderful book. Very democratic. I've read all the offerings, and I would like to leaf through a some of the pages and remember some of the expressions made by the devotees. Kirtananda Swami says that Prabhupada did what no previous Acharya had ever done, namely take Krishna consciousness outside of India. Your boldness, rooted in unlimited faith in Krishna, who can make the impossible possible, is perhaps your most glorious quality. Jayapataka Swami writes many, many memories of his personal service to Prabhupada. He asserts that he received many personal instructions throughout the years. Prabhupada called him to go to India and help Achyutananda Prabhu there. And he stayed at the Gaudiya Math and met some of his godbrothers. But Prabhupada wrote to him that he should have his own place in Calcutta. And he got a place, and Prabhupada came there. And Prabhupada gave him an Achyutananda Sannyas and Radhastami of 1970. He was the first temple president in Calcutta. And then he said he had been chanting 32 rounds, but Prabhupada told him to chant 16 rounds and go preach. Then he sent him to Mayapur. He was the first president in Mayapur. He was living in a grass hut, and Prabhupada claimed and blessed him with his association. He said that living like this was sattvic, but that no one would come and live with us. So we have to use steel, cement, and bricks to develop Mayapur. This is rajasic, he said. But in this way, people will come and stay here. He later made Jayapataka Maharaj co-director of Mayapur with Bhavananda Prabhu. He said that they should expand the congregation and bring them to our temples. And that is how we do things to this day. We train them for a few days and send them back to practice in their own homes. In this regard, you instructed that we should follow the model of Hare Krishna Nam Hata, as given by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Jayapataka Maharaj has done that in a very big way, creating thousands of followers. He said that Prabhupada told him that there should be a GBC and should remain united, and he appointed him to serve on the GBC. He told him that we should all work under the GBC. Any one of you can fall, but I have faith that the whole GBC, the majority, will be okay. So Jayapataka Maharaj then admits that he's weak in health now, but he pleads with his disciples and all devotees to push on Prabhupada's movement and hopes that he will continue to get Prabhupada's mercy. Jayadvaita Maharaj wrote an offering, which in some ways I thought was like the style of my writing. He admitted to having problems with distractions and inattention in serving Prabhupada, and then checked himself and said, is this a confession or homage? And then he praises Prabhupada as none different than Krishna and speaks more about inattention while chanting and in service and prays to be able to serve Prabhupada without any inattention. Vidyananda Maharaj writes that Prabhupada is a pure devotee from Krishna, accepted and reciprocated with the sincere devotion of varieties of ISKCON devotees. With great wisdom and foresight, you often insisted that within reasonable boundaries, we should respect the individuality of the diverse souls who come to you for shelter. Everyone knows how you came to the West, how with pure devotion you ingeniously established Krishna consciousness in America, and thereby and thereupon throughout the world. You did this within a specific historical context. We, your followers, now struggle faithfully and creatively to continue your glorious legacy by trying to act with ingenuity and purity to keep Krishna consciousness relevant. Giriraj Maharaj wrote his homage as a tribute to Prabhupada's follower in Bombay, Mr. Sethji. And it's a very riveting description as described in the BBT, Vyas Pooj book. Mr. Sethji was in Bombay and he first met Prabhupada, and Prabhupada asked him what he did. He said, "I get up in the morning and I take my tea and toast and then I go to work." And Prabhupada said to him, "What's the difference between you and a pig?" And then he asked Mr. Sethji to hold the Harinam every Sunday and feed the devotees sumptuously. So he started this tradition and kept it up. Then he moved his family in a house right near the devotees' land in Juhu, and he became Prabhupada's right-hand man. He worked in construction, and so he had facilities to help getting cement and bricks and working with workers. At one point, he told Prabhupada that they didn't have permission to build the main project, so Mr. Sethji told Prabhupada that we had to pay the government some money if we wanted to get permission. He said we had to pay them $5,000, 5,000 rupees. Prabhupada asked, "How do we know if we pay the money we'll get the permission?" Mr. Sethji said, "The municipal commissioner is the final authority, and he seems to be a decent man." Prabhupada said, "Let me think about it, I'll tell you tomorrow." Then Prabhupada talked about it with his devotees, including Giriraj. And he thought over and said, "Whether Mr. Sethji will actually keep the money, some of it himself, and not give it to the commissioner, and whether if we're giving it to the commissioner, he'll actually give permission." So he decided that he wouldn't give the money. The next day, Mr. Sethji came to see Prabhupada, and the devotees were anxious to see how he would take Prabhupada's news. Mr. Sethji said, "So, what do you think?" Prabhupada asked, "Should we do it?" Sethji replied, "Yes, because otherwise we're not getting the permission." Prabhupada immediately said, "All right," completely contradicting what he said to his followers before. And Giriraj reflects that he had faith in Mr. Sethji, but he wanted to demonstrate to them how he had to think things out with very keen intelligence so as not to be cheated. And they did get permission. But then, in the course of the struggle, the municipality had demolished a semi-permanent temple that they had built for Sri Sri Radharasa Bihari. The devotees campaigned to get permission to rebuild it, but then they concluded that they didn't need a permit because they already had permission and the municipality didn't actually have valid ground for demolishing it. Mrs. Nair heard about this and went to court to get an injunction to stop them from rebuilding. This was on a Friday, and the judge said he wouldn't give the injunction without hearing the other side. So they had a weekend to rebuild the temple. In those days, it was difficult to get cement and bricks. The demand was greater than the supply. But Mr. Sethji was able to get it himself through his company. But then one of the government officials came to the site and said, "You should immediately stop the construction." Mr. Sethji replied, "No, why should we stop?" The man threatened, "Well, you can build it up, but I will come in the night with 50 gundas, hooligans, and break it down." Mr. Sethji turned to his son, who was by his side, and said, "Bridge Mohan, bring my revolver and my rifle." Then Mr. Sethji said to Mahatri, Don't bring 50 gundas, bring 100. Bring 200. I have 250 cartridges. He was that staunch. Then he and his son, with his rifle in hand and his son with the revolver, stayed up all night in the pouring rain to complete and protect the project, and no one came to disturb the work. Then he goes on saying how Prabhupada didn't initiate him, told him that he had to do things that were a little awkward sometimes, and it would be better that he wasn't a disciple, but he was more than a disciple. And he passed away at 88 years old, thinking of Prabhupada. And Giriraj Swami says he has gone to Prabhupada. Pralananda Swami writes about cooperation and stresses that we need to do this in order to push on Prabhupada's movement. Trivikram Swami tells how he first met Prabhupada in 26 Second Avenue. He was introduced in Prabhupada's room by Burijan, and Prabhupada said to him, "Thank you very much." His first impression of Prabhupada was that he was very vulnerable, that he was living there without any servants and in a bad neighborhood. And when he said to him, "Thank you very much," Trivikram thought, "I haven't done anything to deserve being thanked." But he was very impressed by Prabhupada's reaching out to him, being so warm and hospitable with encouraging words. After a few months, he sent him to England. And Prabhupada came then also after several months. And Trivikram got the opportunity to massage Prabhupada, and he surrendered to him. Smita Krishna Swami writes that he's living in a remote place. I don't know where he is. You know where he is?
Sweden.
Up in Sweden someplace.
Yeah. He describes it as a remote corner of the world. And he says, from him it's not remote, because the devotees are chanting and dancing and trying to serve in different capacities. So he hopes that this small part counts in a place that matters. Kavi Chandra Swami writes about book distribution. He said, "Last year saw a great increase in the distribution of your books, and so many books have been published in so many languages. I was present when you spoke the following. So kindly help me, this is my request. Print as many books in as many languages and distribute throughout the whole world. Then Krishna conscious movement will automatically increase." Bir Krishna Swami also writes about Prabhupada's books. He says that when he joined in 1971, the devotees were very enthusiastic to read the books. They were hungry to read them as they came out one after another, printed by the BBT. They would read among themselves and share, and there was always excitement in the air. So as he travels in the course of his service, he encourages and exhorts the devotees to drive into the transcendental ocean that Prabhupada has given in the form of his books. Modern media may vie for our attention, like the siren song, or we may be inclined in other ways, but we should use our intelligence and refocus our attention on your words. Lokanath Swami writes about how he first came to Prabhupada's movement at the 1971 Bombay Mandal, Bhagavat Discourses Festival, and how it was advertised by Shyam Sundar with a big billboard in the business center and a helium-filled balloon at the Cross Maidan Center, and how he was so impressed to see all the American and European sadhus chanting, and he thought it was very authentic. And he was, there were so many people he couldn't get near the devotees, and he felt he couldn't speak to them because he couldn't speak English so well. But became very attracted to the movement by that festival. He describes it in detail, and how he surrendered to Prabhupada and has been serving for so many years since then. A devotee named Bhakti Prapana Parvati Maharaj writes about Prabhupada's impact on Mexico. He tells the history, starting with a lady devotee, Brahmacharini named Chandravali, who wanted to go with some other ladies and start preaching there. But Prabhupada didn't think it was fit for them to go like that. Then a little later she married another Spanish-speaking devotee, Chitsukananda. And together they had plans to go to Mexico City. Prabhupada wrote to her that he was very glad that she married Chitsukananda at the temple. And this is practical proof that boys and girls in the country should be married and engaged in preaching work. So you may start a center in Mexico as you desire and start an edition of BTG in the Spanish language. So Chitsukananga and Chandrabali go up there with the whole stream of letters back and forth between them. And Prabhupada encourages them. They get one center, and then they're able to get a nice mansion, and they invite Prabhupada to come down there. And he ends his homage saying that a man bought the tickets for Prabhupada to go there, and he writes to be continued. So next year he'll probably write more in his homage about Prabhupada's visit to Mexico. Parthasarathi Goswami writes about Prabhupada's visit to England, Bhaktivedanta Manor, in July 1973. He had joined a few months before that. And he quotes from Prabhupada's arrival address. Prabhupada first thanked George Harrison, but then he spoke about Radha Madhava. He said he is always enjoying in the company with Srimati Radharani, Radha Madhava. He does not go outside Vrindavan. Krishna, original Krishna, he does not go out of his step out of Vrindavan, leaving aside the gopis. And Parthasarathi Goswami points out how Prabhupada perfectly balanced the tattva and the rasa in teaching about Radha and Krishna. Because if we didn't teach the tattva, we would take Radha and Krishna as ordinary romantic affairs. And he quotes Prabhupada from the Madhya Lila saying that Lord Chaitanya didn't discuss Radha-Krishna affairs in public. But in this introductory arrival address, Prabhupada does speak about the gopis, and he says, the gopis are village girls, not educated, not brahmana, not Vedantists, but Krishna is within their palms, within their hands. So he says this rasika statement shows Prabhupada's mature realization of Madhurya Rasa. Although you have written a warning about discussing such topics, still occasionally you made confidential statements. Then he says that Prabhupada has given the world the highest possible gift with entry into Radha and Krishna's pastimes by following the basic program of Vaidhi Bhakti. And that he's confident that as Krishna is within the gopis' palms, Radha and Krishna are within his palms. And he humbly prays that this fallen soul and all your followers will one day become qualified for you to deliver us, Radha and Krishna and the gopis. Radhanath Swami writes that the past year was marked with striking events that shook the earth. He mentions the tsunami that devastated Japan, the tornadoes that ripped the southern USA, riots, demonstrations, and killings in the Middle East, the killing of Osama bin Laden, fear of Pakistan building up its nuclear arsenal, and we watched our beloved Vrindavan being torn apart by senseless greed. But surrounded by hopelessness, confusion, and despair, we're reminded of the simple truth which you imparted. Godhead is light, ignorance is darkness. Where there is Godhead, there can be no darkness. This year also marks an event that endears our hearts to you. 40 years ago, Prabhupada demonstrated the power of his relentless compassion by going in the summer of 1971 to Russia. And although the height of communism was strong and Prabhupada was restricted in his movements and the government was watching his every move, within a few days, by interviewing one boy, he sparked a revolution that shook nations and affected millions of lives. Bhakti Raghava Swami says that every day when he performs his pooj to his Saligram Shila, he hears a lecture by Prabhupada. It has become a daily routine, and I always look forward to hearing your classes, for they are full of wit and wisdom. Dhanodhara Maharaj writes about an event that took place at an opening ceremony of Yogamaya, an upscale yoga studio in Chelsea, where he's also asked to lead a monthly satsanga. And a very special kirtan was held there by Gauravanta, Gauravani, others, and Janavi, who chanted. And the studio was jammed with a typical midtown Manhattan crowd of professionals. And it was a very special occasion. And at the end of it, Kasturba turned to him and said, "Who but Prabhupada could have done this?" So Dhanodhara Maharaj praises Prabhupada and how his legacy is being carried on. Gurudas.
Yes.
Bhakti Charu Swami says the appearance day reminds them of the disappearance day of Prabhupada. And he said at that time he was serving Prabhupada intimately, and Prabhupada gave him so many instructions about initiation after his disappearance and about Gaudiya Math. But somehow it all went over his head and he couldn't retain it. And he regrets that he missed those opportunities of serving Prabhupada and being more attentive to his instructions. But now his solace is that he takes shelter within ISKCON. Govindadasi writes about herself that she was a 21-year-old girl student at the University of Texas in Austin, and she left Texas with her husband and went to San Francisco in search of a guru. She had a program of yoga meditation that she did daily in a forested park in San Francisco, focused upon the teachings in her yoga book, "When the Chela is Ready, the Guru Will Appear." And she left everything, but she met Prabhupada there in San Francisco. She says there's no greater gift in this universe than the relationship between guru and disciple. There is no purer love than the love between the guru and disciple, for he is the one who takes our hand and leads us into the realm of spirit and delivers us to the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. She and her husband served Prabhupada as secretary and servant from 1967 to 69. Then he asked them to go to Hawaii. She was feeling bad about going to Hawaii, so she went to Prabhupada's room one day and said, "Oh, I'm feeling in Maya today." And Prabhupada gave her a stern look and said, "You're in Maya now in the presence of your spiritual master? What will you do when I'm not present?" And she said, now, in the absence of his physical presence, she's feeling strongly his vani, and she's serving him. Arundhati Dasi writes about her having the service of singing at Kirtan, and how she's produced a CD, Krishna Journey of Love. And she prays that her son Aniruddha may be of service to Prabhupada and his movement. Kaushalya Devi Dasi writes about her memories of Prabhupada in India in 1970. Once they were staying at a rich man's house, and she went up to Prabhupada at a quiet moment and told him that she had memorized the Sri Yasa Upanishad. Then at a program later, he asked her to sing it, and she was very nervous, and she began Om Purnam Madak Purnam Midam. As she sang the verses, she watched Prabhupada and became more confident. He was beaming with smile, and his smile was beaming with pride, and his smile was effulgent. When he finished, he called her to him, and as she started to pay her obeisances, he pulled her closer and patted her on the back and rubbed her head. It was a really special moment I will never forget. Then during the Indian-Pakistan War of 1971, there was a blackout, and Prabhupada was not able to stay up at night and turn the lights on in his room. So they had the idea to put black paper on the windows. When Prabhupada came into the room and turned the lights on, he was delighted. He said, "Now this is first-class intelligence, that without my asking you, you do this service. Second-class intelligence is, I ask you to do the service and then you do it. And third-class intelligence is, I ask you to do it and you run out of the room." Then she was sent to with a devotee named Srimati to Jaipur to get deities. Srimati left her passport in Delhi, and so when they checked into the hotel, the police were concerned and thought that they were American spies because they had only one passport. They were turned over to the custody of the pujari of the Govindaji temple, and he vouched for them, and they would stay at his home. So every morning they would sing bhajans in the temple there in Jaipur. And after Mangalarti, they spoke about Prabhupada, and the crowds of people came. And they told them to bring Prabhupada to Jaipur. And soon, by the grace of Govindaji, everything was arranged. People agreed to put up the money for a pandal program, and they convinced the pujari to allow Prabhupada to stay at the guest house. And Prabhupada was very pleased with the program. Balabhadra Das and Chai Devi Das, he write a combined homage all about the cows. They write about the passing away of a cow who was 20 years old. And then they say to Prabhupada that all those great souls who have nursed a dying cow, we pray that you give them the strength to keep their hearts open to your presence while they try to give their beloved cow comfort. It is only your mercy that allows you to see you there. Without you, how could anyone's heart become cold when this most innocent of creatures suffers? Please bless the cowherds worldwide. Protect them from fatigue and weariness in the face of disease and death. Give them deep love and understanding in such times. Give them joy in birthing and youthful calf frolicking. Give them a deep sense of accomplishment and plentiful harvest from plowing with their oxen. Give them with the rising in the early morning to see their cows basking in the morning sun as the mist leaves the hillsides. It's a whole meditation on cows and cow protection and cow herds. I think I'll stop now. But it's a very nice book. I wanted to talk some reminiscences of Prabhupada. I chose to talk about Prabhupada in New York when he came back from San Francisco in 1967 until he went back to India. But first I remember him in 1966 before he left for San Francisco. That was the most wonderful period when he opened 26 Second Avenue. He was so accessible to us and cooked lunch every day for about 12 devotees who gathered in his room. And he would say, "Eat more, eat more." And one devotee, Stradhish, used to eat 16 chapatis. And Prabhupada encouraged him. I asked Prabhupada, was there a level of spiritual advancement you could make from which you wouldn't fall down? Because I had always tried to stop illicit sex and intoxication, but after a few weeks I wouldn't be able to maintain it. And Prabhupada said to me, yes, just that one word empowered me to give up all my sinful habits. Prabhupada, in October of that year, started going to Tompkins Square Park. We carried a carpet there and set it out under a tree. And for 3 hours in the afternoon, Prabhupada would chant very strongly. He was so virile and strong in that first period before he went to San Francisco and in San Francisco. He was like a young man. He worked more than the young men. He seemed more dynamic than the pale New Yorkers. And we were shocked when he left for San Francisco. We thought he was going to stay in New York. So he stayed there for 4 months. And as Mukunda Maharaj has written in his book, he created a great movement in the hippie uprising in Hyde Ashbury. One other tribute in this book I wanted to mention was Anuttama. He was recalling Mukunda Maharaj's wonderful memoir that he wrote, and how when Mukunda Maharaj came to Prabhupada without much notice, and he said he was going to leave and go to India, and then he said goodbye to Prabhupada, and he mentioned offhand that he was going to California first, and that California was a good place to open a center. But he just said it in an offhand way, not volunteering to do it himself. He was going to India. And Anuttama writes that he was whimsically leaving his guru and the whole movement in North America to follow his whims. And on leaving the room, Prabhupada just said to him before he went out the door, "Mukunda, if you could start a center in San Francisco, that would be very nice." And Mukunda didn't know how to take it because he hadn't thought of doing it himself. But once he got to San Francisco and he met with Shyam Sundar, with his friend Sam and his wife Melody, they were enthusiastic about Prabhupada and hearing it from Mukunda and Janaki. And he changed his mind upon deliberation and opened the center there, and then Prabhupada came. So he stayed with them for 4 months and things were very flourishing, and he told them to hold a Rath Yatra with a flatbed truck. And then he came back to New York in April, and he was back to our same location, 26 Second Avenue. And everything was happy again. He attended a big political rally by a man who was running for president, a hippie, a be-in at the Village Theater, and we chanted on stage. And then he did a television program, and he was under bright lights just the day before Memorial Day. And the next day he got up late, and then during the day he had a stroke, and his left side was paralyzed. This was like a follow-up to the heart attacks he had had in the Jaladutta. He was very ill. And it was Memorial Day, and we couldn't get a doctor to come out. But Brahmananda had a contact, a lawyer named Max Lerner, by whose influence Prabhupada was admitted to Beth Israel Hospital. That hospital was within walking distance of 26 Second Avenue. I think it was around 14th Street or so. So Prabhupada was taken in there in an emergency condition. But within a day, he recovered and he was sitting up in bed. But we devotees stayed with him all the time. 24 hours a day, there was a devotee in his room or two devotees keeping watch with him. We brought him fruit and we brought him prasadam. They had given him a lot of tests and a lot of hospital treatment. They had given him a spinal injection. I asked him if it hurt, and he said, "We are tolerant." One time I was the only one there on watch in the afternoon, and he was sleeping. And he woke up and he sat up and said, "I do not know Krishna, I only know my Guru Maharaj." The doctor came to visit him, and Prabhupada had two of Jadarani's paintings, one painting of Radha Krishna and a painting of Lord Nisringadev tearing apart Hiranyakashipu. And the doctor looked at them and Prabhupada said, "This is Krishna. He has his loving affairs and his angry side." Then Prabhupada got restless with staying in the hospital. And he asked his devotees to get him out. But the doctors didn't think he should go yet. I was in the hospital in an emergency condition last December with pneumonia, and I found it intolerable after a few days. I couldn't stand the hospital routine, being poked and pushed and being injected in both arms with needles and having to pass in the bed and the man in the room with me, the grouchy old man. And I wanted to be discharged, but the doctor said I couldn't be. So I wanted to do what Prabhupada did, which I remember, and which I had written in Prabhupada Lilamrita, that he had discharged himself against the doctor's orders. So I understood from that my experience what a serious thing that was that Prabhupada did. Because when I insisted on being discharged, they sent a psychiatrist to see me. And she threatened me. She said if I left the hospital without permission, my insurance wouldn't cover the hospital stay, and my relationship with my doctor, my caring physician, would be broken. So she really threatened me, and I backed down and stayed in the hospital until the doctors gave me permission. But Prabhupada didn't back down. And he had Brahmananda and Gargamuni to spring him out. And they took the needles out of his arms and put him on a rolling trolley. And the doctors caught him. And they said, "If you take this man out, you're going to kill him. And it will be on your heads." But they said, we don't care what you say, he wants to go. And they took him into a waiting car and took him to 22nd Avenue. Prabhupada bowed before the picture of his Guru Maharaj and said that the grandfather is more kind to his grandchildren than the father is. Then in an attempt to recover his health, Prabhupada stayed in a cottage in Long Island with Govinda Dasi and Gorsundar taking care of him, and Kirtanananda was there. I visited also. And Prabhupada was weak, but when he got just a little bit of strength, he would sit up and start preaching strongly, using all his strength. But the weather wasn't very good there. It was cloudy, and he didn't get any sunshine. So he decided to go to San Francisco in search of better weather. And they went to San Francisco, they flew to Stinson Beach. While he was there, the devotees held the Rath Yatra in San Francisco, but Prabhupada was out at the beach and he wasn't healthy enough to go. They later drove the deities out to see Prabhupada at Stinson Beach, and they told him excitedly all about the Rath Yatra. So he stayed with them for a few weeks, but the weather there wasn't good either. So he decided to go to India. When he was in the hospital, he dictated a letter to me that he sent to a friend in India asking for some Ayurvedic medicine. He said, there are Ayurvedic doctors in Vrindavan. Give me some medicine. I think I have a disease like such and such. He said, I'm paralyzed on my left side and I have a banging in my head. But avoid the quacks. He said, there are some quacks, but get me a genuine Ayurvedic doctor. But now he was thinking that he would go to India and maybe he would die there in Vrindavan. We were all very shocked and felt very vulnerable. He came to New York and stayed a few days there. We were very sad and afraid that if he did leave us and go to Vrindavan and he didn't come back, how would we maintain our Krishna consciousness? We were such raw neophytes. But he assured us, he said that he would come back and that we would all be together. He would be there and we would be here, but we would both be chanting Hare Krishna and we would be packed up together. So Prabhupada was accompanied by all the New York devotees to the airport. The photo was taken, all the devotees standing around him looking sad. And he flew with Kirtanananda to Delhi and went to Vrindavan. Then we started receiving aerograms from him. I went to Boston and received a letter. And he said his health was getting better in the heat of Vrindavan and that he had typed this letter himself, and that he would be back in 6 months. And he actually did that. He came back by way of San Francisco. And sometimes he says that he really started his movement then, 1968, when he returned. But he was noticeably weak from then on. He was a different person from what he was in New York City in the first 1966 up to January. And after that stroke, he was always weaker. He couldn't play the mridanga, and he couldn't sing in the park anymore. He became like an old man, but he was beautiful. So those are some memories.
Om Kanta Mirandhasya Kiranjana Shlaka Shakshun Miditam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurudev Namah. Sri Chaitanya Mano Vistam Stapitam Jain Kutile Shayam Rupa Kadama Iyam Tadhati Shapadantika. Paramananda asked for some stories, yeah? I was talking to Pradyumna before I came here, and he was saying, what is all this Prabhupada pastimes, and wherever you go they want you to tell Prabhupada pastimes, and people are going on, they have a circuit, and they go and speak about Prabhupada pastimes. Prabhupada hardly spoke about his Guru Maharaj. So then, but I read Mukunda Maharaj's book, he said, it was quite good. Had some nice things in there. I tend not to remember Prabhupada's specific activities with Prabhupada, unless there's a context. Then maybe I remember something. There's some instruction or some point. Then I remember something. Otherwise, I tend to. Well, I Prabhupada. People, I'm in that category of devotees who seemed to have a lot of association with Prabhupada, but really didn't. I was just a rank and file man. I took sannyas after Prabhupada departed. I wasn't on the GBC, so I was just brahmachari. But sometimes I would be with Prabhupada, and I suppose over the years, a little bit here and a little bit there, and it becomes something. Sometimes I was with Prabhupada in Boston just after I was initiated. Sasrut Maharaj arranged that. I became assistant cook for Srila Prabhupada. The Prabhupada was staying in a little house on Chester Street, which he called Hare Krishna Street. And I remember we were staying up painting and fixing and doing everything the night before, which was sort of typical ISKCON ritual or ISKCON endeavor. And then Prabhupada came, and then I think the whole batch of us fell asleep in his house after he arrived. At least I did. I think a batch of us did. But I woke up and Prabhupada was talking to Jadarani about Kadamba flowers and, you know, the specifics of how things look for her paintings. And a couple of times we were with Prabhupada in Boston. I remember one time Prabhupada gave a lecture at one of the institutions, one of the colleges there. And the part that I remember was afterwards, because Prabhupada gave his lecture, and then we had a sort of a big room where we'd set up books and prasadam and so on for after the program. And I was there talking to some people, and you know, all the devotees were talking to students or whoever. And all of a sudden, this big wave went through the room. You know how a wave goes through the room when something happens, you know, someone got shot or whatever. And this wave went through the room. And I didn't know what happened. And anyway, finally I found out later what had happened, that Prabhupada had been talking to some professor, I think an Indian professor, and the man was going on that everything is one, and everything is one, and everything is one, and one is everything, and everything is one. And finally, Prabhupada had grabbed him by the shirt and said, if everything is one, then why don't you wear a cotton ball instead of a shirt?
Vinodas said, Prabhupada, you have to leave now. We have a taxi waiting. Pulled him out of the encounter.
Yeah. Prabhupada didn't compromise. That was his pleasure was to fight. About his spiritual master, it was said, Rupanuga virudhapa siddhanta dvantaha. He doesn't tolerate anything that's against the teachings of Srila Rupa Goswami. But Srila Prabhupada also, he didn't have charity toward those who were trying to make Krishna less than he is. It was like an eternal pastime of Prabhupada's to swat the foolish commentator who sees a distinction between Krishna's body and Krishna himself. Even Prabhupada wrote, I remember that it was to me, but then when I looked it up, it was to Satsrut Maharaj, asking to insert something in Bhagavad Gita as it is. He was writing Chaitanya Charitamrita, and while writing Chaitanya Charitamrita, he came across a verse, Dehi Deha, Deha Dehi,
Deha Dehi
Vibhedo Yam,
Kuchit.
There's never any distinction in the Supreme Controller between the body and the person whose body it is. And Prabhupada said, write this in, put this in there. Just one more punch at the guy. And then just lately I wrote about this, we found a manuscript page where again Prabhupada had taken another swat at it. And so that's a candidate for going into the book also. It, Prabhupada just wasn't neutral. He wasn't, and all the, generally that was the mood in among swamis and yogis, what we used to call the uptown swamis, in distinction to Srila Prabhupada, who was the downtown swami. The uptown swamis were all accommodating, and they accepted everything, and whatever you said, that was all part of the flow, and probably was so much the opposite. I've told this before, one Yoga Society girl was coming to 26 Second Avenue. A very nice Yoga Society girl. You know how Yoga Society girls are very, very nice. Very gentle and very harmonious and very saintly, sort of. And because they understand that everything is one. So this girl had been coming for a short time to the programs, and then Prabhupada came. So then she came to attend Prabhupada's class. And after Prabhupada called for questions, she said, Swamiji, isn't it true that everything is ultimately one? Prabhupada said no. he said, just like there are nine holes in the body. He said, but it doesn't mean that we can put food in any hole. He said, can you put food here, or here, or here? He said, no, you have to put the food in the stomach. So even though there are nine holes, it's not that they're all the same. In so many different ways, Prabhupada demolished that idea that everything is one, 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 and one. I remember there was a lecture at Marsh Chapel at Boston University. It was sparsely attended, but one quite educated person at the end asked a question about Advaita philosophy. Appeared to be a well-read person, and he asked a question about Advaita and about the drop becoming one with the ocean. And Prabhupada responded that if the drop becomes one with the ocean, then over time the drop will evaporate, and then it will no longer be part of the ocean, and it will rain on the land again. And said, but if you become an aquatic in the ocean, then you can stay. Very brilliantly, I remember, Prabhupada, you know, really took time to answer his question and really just demolished the whole, again, demolished the idea that the drop merges with the ocean and everything becomes one. It doesn't. But when there's individuality, when you become an aquatic in the ocean, then you've got permanent resonance. So throughout his career, Prabhupada was always just no, no, no. That Yogi Bhajan, he was another spiritual leader, he came to see Srila Prabhupada in Berkeley, and I happened to be there. And the yogi invited Prabhupada to a peace conference where they would talk about... He was a funny guy who sort of talked in a... Well, anyway, a contemporary sort of Western way in some respects. But anyway, he was very upbeat and inviting Prabhupada to come to this conference. And Prabhupada said, what will be the use of this conference? It's simply talking. And Prabhupada told him, you can write it in your notebook. He said that simply by these conferences there'll be no peace. You know, we want to shake hands with everyone and attend their conferences, and we'll hear something from them and they'll hear something from us, and we'll have an exchange of ideas. And in this way the world will gradually be uplifted by discourse and so on. Prabhupada just said to him, forget it. There's not going to be any benefit to your conference at all. It's a waste of time. A waste of time. And then Prabhupada presented that people take to, that this is practical, chanting Hare Krishna and distribution of this knowledge of Krishna, that will be effective, and all your talk, and peace conferences will accomplish nothing. And Prabhupada had no to philanthropy, no to humanitarian efforts, no to peace conferences, no to oneness, no to pious activities. In these days we hear about the sort of Srila Prabhupada who was so kind that he accepted everyone as they are and understood everyone and was all sort of accommodating. And that's a person I never met. No, 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 no. What is this nonsense? That is another foolishness. To the point of absolute ridicule. Purushottam, our godbrother, who was Prabhupada's secretary at the time of the moon expedition, didn't believe that they went to the moon and had wanted Prabhupada to see it on television, and was, you know, they went. And Swamiji is just like, and Prabhupada would just, no. According to Shastra, the moon is a heavenly planet. How could they go with their impious activities? And just digging at him. And Malati, I think, went to make some samosas. Prabhupada said, where is Malati? Has she gone to the moon? Anyone can go to the moon. It was such a pleasure, actually, because we were so used to these people who would say what they thought you wanted to hear. That was their program. Even Prabhupada said about these some spiritual leaders that they, whatever you have, they're like merchants. You know, whatever you want, they have it in stock. You know, you want yoga, you want Jesus, you want meditation, you want this, you want that, little of this, some Christianity, some, everything's on their shelf because they're merchants. So Prabhupada was not at all like that. He had a conclusion to present, he had a message to present, and he wasn't going to water it down. He There was one time the even, you know, what would appeal to the public, what would not appeal to the public. I think there was a World's Fair up in Montreal in the early days, 67, 68. The temple was asking for some painting. So Jadarani got this message that they want some painting. Which painting should I send? So she's sitting there, she's painting a picture of Lord Bohr, Varahadev. Prabhupada said, you can send that one. He said, I don't think, Swamiji, I don't think they'll understand Lord Bohr. I said, that's all right, they may understand or not understand, send it. And Prabhupada gave that, cited that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that I've come with some fruits to sell, and I'm prepared to sell them very cheap. He was going to Varanasi, the headquarters of the impersonals. I'm prepared to sell them very cheap, and if they don't buy them, then I'll take them back. Probably said, but everybody bought. Everybody bought. So, just the opposite of saying what it is that we think people want to hear, Prabhupada just said what Krishna wanted him to say. What his, what he'd received, what his duty was to present. And if we didn't like it, too bad. 26 Second Avenue, Lower East Side, in the middle of the 1960s. Vietnam War was okay. Illicit sex was not. Drugs were, you know, psychedelics, the things that opened your mind and gave you access to new worlds and new dimensions. It was nonsense. Just the opposite. Didn't matter what they wanted to hear, what they would accept, not accept. Prabhupada just laid it on the line. And those who were prepared to buy it, they bought it. And those who weren't going to buy it went someplace else. But Prabhupada wasn't going to adulterate it to make it something that they would like. Prabhupada said a little bit of a pure thing is better than heaps and heaps of adulterated things. Better than heaps and heaps of adulterated things. So he just, that was his whole campaign. As it is, as it is, as it is, as it is. Women are less intelligent. Some woman reporter came, probably less intelligent. And he just showed and you know, laid it on the line. By practical reasoning, this is how it is. Darwin was a rascal. Scientists are fools. Freud was another rascal. Churchill was another rascal. Roosevelt was another rascal. All rascals. One man, I've told this before, one Yoga Society man, older man, wrote to Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, well, when I come to New York City, then we can speak. So the man came to 61 Second Avenue, and he had his letter, and Prabhupada was there. He was still living at 26 Second Avenue, although the temple moved to 61. So the man had his letter, so all right. So Brahmananda sent me with this gentleman down to meet Prabhupada. And the man was very respectful, and he said, Swamiji, I like your movement so much, but one thing is that I've heard from your disciples that you said that Swami Vivekananda is a rascal. And it seemed to me that he's a very saintly person. And I don't understand why you would say that he's a rascal. Prabhupada said, who has said this? If they have said that I have called him rascal, and I have not said it, then he is rascal. The other man was very, okay, that's good. So then Prabhupada had a book on his bookshelf, Bhagavad Gita by Dr. Radhakrishna. So he pulled the book over and showed it to the man. He said, "Do you know this book?" "Oh, Dr. Radhakrishna, Vedanta Society." The man was clearly pleased. So Prabhupada said yes. And opened the book and he said, "Well, this verse, what does he say?" So the translation, the man read, "Become my devotee, offer your homage to me, surrender to me, think of me." Prabhupada said, "Yes, he is a very good scholar. He has translated very nicely." Now, commentary, what does he say? Man began reading. "It is not to Krishna that we have to surrender, but to the unborn, beginningless." Prabhupada said, "Just see. Therefore I say they are all rascals." And Prabhupada began explaining the verse, "Namam duskritana mudha prabhyante niradhama maya pratigyana asurim pamanashudha." One of his absolutely favorite verses, that anyone who doesn't surrender to me, Krishna says, is a miscreant, he's the lowest of mankind, he's a fool, his intelligence is stolen by illusion, he's demonic. So Prabhupada began expounding on these various terms for the gentleman. And Prabhupada then Prabhupada said, "It's not my saying." He said, "It is Krishna's saying. What can I do?" "That I have to present Krishna's message." And that's what Prabhupada did throughout. If Krishna said it, then Prabhupada would present that. He considered that was his duty, to present what Krishna had said. And if someone else had something opposed to say, then it was a fight. It was Prabhupada's duty to call him up on it, and not just to shake hands and say, "Well, everyone looks at things a different way." Prabhupada would just boom, 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 boom. And it was so wonderful to see Prabhupada stand up one time to everyone. One time Prabhupada asked me in Los Angeles, I was with Radha Vallabha, Prabhupada said, "Are you sorry when I criticize the scientists?" It was like a little, almost like a little, not exactly market research, but you know, getting a little feedback what we thought, or maybe quizzing us to see what we thought. "Are you sorry when I criticize the scientists?" And I told him that actually in the beginning I was not so happy with it. Because consider that we grow up in a society where science is authority. If science has endorsed something, then it's a fact. And if science has not endorsed something, then it's superstition. And here Prabhupada was just rejecting science. It's like in a previous age, if you rejected God. Now you can reject God and that's okay, but if you reject science, that's heresy. And here was Prabhupada just rejecting these scientists as being fools, as being rascals, rejecting evolution, which was, we all knew that evolution was how man came to be. And Prabhupada just rejected it out of hand, rejected the moon landing, rejected the whole scientific enterprise as being a waste of time because it doesn't solve the problems of life. Birth, death, disease, and old age are still going to be there. So it's finally a waste of time. There was that book cover of Beyond Birth and Death. The original cover had a skull lying on the beach with a rose growing out of it. Prabhupada said that was the skull of a scientist. So it's a of course, Prabhupada's presentation was many-sided. He did other things than blast them. He had so many other things to say. But it was an especially wonderful aspect of Srila Prabhupada that he was so uncompromising and so strong in opposing all other elements. All other elements. He told Giriraj Maharaj that my Guru Maharaj never compromised, I never compromised, nor should any of my disciples ever compromise. So we offer our obeisances at the lotus feet of our uncompromising spiritual master. Hare Krishna.
I think Arundhati, please, you speak now as long as you want.
Yeah. You don't want to go first?
No, I'd like you to go first.
Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tinamne Namaste Saraswati Deve Gurubhani Pracharane Nivishesha Shunyavadi Prashtracha Desha Tarane. I thought I would start with just reading this poem that I wrote for the Vyasa Puja book. And I thought I'd write years ago, but it was in 1976, I wrote a poem for Prabhupada, and it was in the form of an anagram. And it said, all glories to Srila Prabhupada down the left-hand side. And so each word of the poem, no, each line of the poem started with that letter. Is that, am I describing that correctly?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So down the left hand side of the page, it said that all glories to Srila Prabhupada, and it's a very simple poem. And I was in India, and Prabhupada was in Mayapur, and I went to see him there. It was just before the Gaur Purnima festival, and went up for a darshan in his room, and Prajumna and I had actually just been, we had to leave India, we'd been in India for quite some time, and we had to leave because of visas, and we had been to Mayapur, I was just recovering from hepatitis. You know, everybody was like really getting sick a lot in those days in India, you know, between malaria, hepatitis, and typhoid fever and this and that. So anyhow, we went over to Sri Lanka, and we thought we would be able to get back within 1 week back to India. And once we got over to Sri Lanka, they told us that we had to stay out of the country for 3 months. And so we ended up staying in Sri Lanka for 3 months. So that was an interesting experience because I only brought like one change of clothes and my Bhagavad Gita and my beads. You know, that was about it. And, you know, so the first lesson I learned was how little you really need. you know, you don't need a lot of stuff in the world to survive. Um, And then when we came back into India, we went to Udupi in South India for a month. And then Prajumna wanted to stay there, so I went back to Mayapur to see Prabhupada. So when I went into a darshan in Prabhupada's room, I gave him this poem, and he was very pleased. He liked it a lot. And at that time, I said to him, "Prabhupada, I wish that I could be with you always. I wish that I could go with you wherever you go and serve you." And he acknowledged the sentiment, you know, smiled. Very nice sentiment. And that was it at the time. And then a few months later, I was in L.A., where Prabhupada was, and my son had been in the Gurukula for about 2 years already, and I was upset that he wasn't learning. It didn't seem like he was learning anything. He didn't know how to read. So I made a complaint, and Prajumna was traveling with Prabhupada already for many years, so he told Prabhupada, you know, that I wasn't happy about the Gurukula. So Prabhupada said, "Well, she can take him out and teach him herself if she would like to do that." So that's what I did. And so I taught him how to read. And, oh yeah, so I don't know, maybe it was a few weeks later, we were in New York. This is 1976, and it was, I think that was the first Ratha Yatra in New York. So Prabhupada was there, and while we were there, Radha Balaba came up to me and said, "Prabhupada is inviting you onto the entourage, onto his entourage, because he wants to do a lot of translation work, and he wants somebody to be there and transcribe the tapes right away as he does the work. So he's inviting you to come along, and Aniruddha, my son, he can also come along." So so that was, I had a very, very strong desire to be with Prabhupada in the physical, you know. And so I really got my desire fulfilled at that time to be traveled with him. I think it was about 16 months altogether until he left his body. I feel so fortunate that I have Sasvaru Maharaj to thank for my service when I first joined the movement. I joined the movement in 1968. And I actually first saw Prabhupada in 1966 in Tompkins Square Park, chanting, and I chanted along at the time. I was a hippie, as many of us were. I think most of us were at that time, of the people that joined the movement. And I wasn't attracted to Prabhupada immediately when I first saw him. Although I joined in the chanting and heard what he said about the Maha Mantra. He looked very stern that day, which he often did. And I just didn't I didn't feel attracted, you know. I chanted and I just walked away. And then, as fate would have it, a month or two later, I turned 18 and I wanted to leave home immediately. But I lived in the Bronx. And I left home and I moved to the village. As it turned out, it was just a few blocks away from the temple, 26 Second Avenue. So I used to pass by the temple all the time and peek in, and you know, sometimes I'd see the devotees coming out, and what is this? You know, it looked really weird to me. I just thought it was so strange. You know, with the shaved heads and the robes and everything, it was like another planet, you know. And I remember I went to a bee-in in, I think it was the first bee-in in Central Park. And everybody was, all these hippies, thousands of hippies there, and everybody was stoned out on LSD. And all of a sudden I see these devotees passing by, chanting Hare Krishna. They were just in a line, walking along, chanting Hare Krishna. They were probably the only ones that weren't high on some drug, you know, but they were high. I think they were probably higher than everybody else. And you could see their energy, the energy was different, you know. It was very interesting. Anyhow, I think, you know, somehow the first meeting with seeing Prabhupada, even though I wasn't attracted, immediately it planted a seed. And so I ended up moving to the village, and then I met Kirtanananda and Hayagriva Numapati that were living, I think, just down the street from where I was living on East 6th Street. And so they told me and my friend Ronnie Deer about Krishna, and that eventually things happened. I went to New Vrindavan. They had just gotten the land, but it wasn't New Vrindavan yet, you know, and they invited us to come up for the weekend, and that's really when I officially got very attracted to chanting the holy name. Anyhow, that's what I was going to say, is that when I joined in 1968, I was in New York, and Brahmananda said, well, you ought to go up to Boston, because there's a place there for the women to actually stay in the temple, you know, whereas there wasn't any ashram for the women in New York. So I went up to Boston, and I remember when I went up there, South Swaroop asked me, what do I know how to do, you know, and he started like naming things. Do you know how to paint? I said no, because there was a number of artists there. And do you know how to cook? No. And I didn't know, you went down a list of things. Everything was no. And then, do you know how to type? I said, yes. So, Satsarup Maharaj, he was already, you know, working on Prabhupada's books. Prabhupada was sending him manuscripts. So, he gave me that service to type.
Huh? Krishna book. Wasn't that the first time?
I don't remember. Uh-huh. So I don't have that great memory.
I was typing Krishna book, and then I had to give it up, and I gave it to you.
Okay. So thank you. So somehow that, you know, ended up being big part of my service all throughout the time that Prabhupada was on the planet, in one form or another. And Prabhupada came to Boston. Before he came to Boston, he came to New York in 1969, and we all went down to see him. All the devotees went down, and we went to the airport, and we were waiting for him at one gate, but it was the wrong gate, and somebody yelled, oh, Prabhupada's over there, and we all ran to bow down at Prabhupada's feet. And I didn't know, I was kind of a new devotee. I didn't know how long to stay down and or for obeisances. And I kind of peeked up to find out if everybody else had gotten up yet. And everybody had gotten up except me, because I didn't know how long you're supposed to stay down. So I peeked up, you know, to see what's going on. And Prabhupada was standing right there above me, you know, and he patted my head. I got my head patted by Srila Prabhupada. So I kind of lost my train of thought here. We were up in the, it had moved, the temple had moved to 61 Second Avenue by that time, but Prabhupada still had his rooms behind. It had moved to 61, and he still had his rooms behind 26 Second Avenue, and so, you know, we used to go up there and have darshan with him, and there was this window that you could look through to see him within the apartment. Yeah, I was looking in, you know, just not thinking that I was disturbing Prabhupada in any way, just watching him. And he called me into the room. And I had already been initiated by the mail. He asked me what my name was. I told him Arundhati. And he said, so Arundhati, the actual Arundhati, she was married to Vasishtha Muni, one of the seven great sages. So Prabhupada said, so Arundhati, you will marry a great sage? And I said, yes, Prabhupada, I will marry a great sage. I didn't know where that came from, but that's what I said. Prajumna was very sage-like, so it was, and is still. So it was just kind of interesting. And then Satsvarup Maharaj, he told Prabhupada that there was, he was a grihastha then, you know, and the rest of us were brahmacharinis. I think there was four brahmacharinis, and there was one brahmachari, Devananda. And Satsvarup told Prabhupada that the women were fighting with each other a lot. Do you remember that?
I think so.
I didn't know what to do about it. So Prabhupada said, they should all be married. Immediately arrange. I will perform the wedding. And it was pretty shocking. You know, we were... very shocked. And they were... there were two of the women, I think they already knew that who they were going to marry. Saradhya and Vaikunthanath were already pretty much set up. And I'm not sure, maybe she was the only one. Maybe Rukmini and Bharadraj, I can't quite remember if they were set up already. And Prabhupada said to send down some of the brahmacharis from Montreal. See who's a worthy candidate. I remember Jayapataka came down, but I guess he wasn't interested in getting married. So Janava was put together with Nandakishore. And then Prabhupada said, I should marry this person named Dayal Nitai. And I was very upset. Just a feeling, you know? I just, like, did not want to marry this person. I don't know if he's still around now. No offense to you if you are Dayal Nitai, but just, you know, I just had this feeling I didn't want to, and I was so upset. And I went up to some hill that was around the temple. I walked up some hill, and I was crying to Krishna. And I was so conflicted because Prabhupada said I should marry Dayal Nitai, you know. And I didn't want to do it, you know. And so obviously it was not a very surrendered soul. And I came back down from the hill, and Satsvarup saw, Jadarani, they saw that I was very upset. And I told them, you know, so we went into Prabhupada's room. Satsvarup Maharaj told Prabhupada, Arundhati's very upset, she doesn't want to marry Dayal Nitai. And Prabhupada said, that is all right. Nothing is by force in Krishna consciousness. If she does not want to get married now, she can get married at some later date. So I was really relieved. And then I had heard about Upendra. Some of the other women had told me about Upendra. So I said to Prabhupada, yeah, I've heard Upendra's a very nice devotee. Maybe I could marry him. He was all the way in Seattle at the time. So Prabhupada said, well, so far as I know, he wants to remain brahmachari. But you can call him up. Satsvarup can call him up and ask him if he wants to come. And if he does, if he wants to get married, then you have my blessings. So I went with Satsvarup and we called up Upendra. And Upendra was in total shock, you know. Come the next day and get married, you know, to somebody you don't know. So he said he'd think about it, and he called back the next morning and he said, I want to remain brahmachari. So anyhow, that day or the next day, Prabhupada performed this wedding that I wasn't in, and he married the three couples. And then he left, and another thing I didn't mention was that in New York, when we were in New York, he came out of his room one day and he said to his servant Purushottam. We used to call him Purushottam, but I guess the correct pronunciation is Purushottama. He said to his servant, see if there's anybody here who would like to bathe my deities every day. And I was out there in the hall, and I said, oh, I'll do it, Srila Prabhupada. So he said, all right, come tomorrow and I will show you what to do. And I didn't have Brahmin initiation yet. I didn't know anything about that. But it didn't seem to matter at the time, you know. So I went into Prabhupada's room the next day, and he was sitting in his chair, and then right across from him was his small brass deities. I think their names were also Radha Govinda. Is that correct?
I don't remember them having names, but they were. I think they were later installed in the temple in New York.
In New York?
This was in New York that Prabhupada asked you? Or this was Bhaskara?
Yeah, it was in his room and behind 26 Second
Avenue.
Yeah,
then those deities were later installed.
Right. So he came and sat down on the floor next to me with the deities, and he said to make a paste of using fuller's earth and tamarind. And he took, he made the paste, and he took the paste, and he did Radharani first. He put the paste on Radharani. And then he took a cloth and he rubbed her to make her shiny. And then he took Krishna and he handed Krishna to me and he said, "Now you do Krishna." And he went back to his seat. And I put the paste down and I was rubbing and rubbing and rubbing and rubbing. And I was thinking, oh my God, I can't get Krishna shiny enough. And finally Prabhupada said, "It is good. Now come back every day, you can do." So I did that service while he was in New York, and I also did the service when he came up to Boston. And then, you know, I told you the story about the marriage. So then Prabhupada left, and I don't know whether the next stop was Columbus or eventually he got to Columbus. I don't know if that was the immediate next stop. In any case, his deities got lost somehow or other in his traveling. And in the meantime, I was still in the Boston Temple, and the whole temple had changed because it had become totally grihastas, except for me, you know. I think that maybe Devananda was still there, so he was a brahmachari, but everyone else, we were living in this small apartment in, you know, different corners, sleeping in different corners of the room. And everyone was grihasta except for me, so I was feeling really out of place all of a sudden. Yeah, I just, all of a sudden I felt like I didn't fit in. So I started praying to Krishna and Prabhupada, "Prabhupada, I'm sorry I didn't get married when you asked me to, but please send me a husband." So then I got a call from Purushottam, and he said, "Prabhupada wants to know if you'd like to come to Columbus and marry Pradyumna." And he thinks that you and him would make a good pair. You're both working on his books, so you have this joint service, and so he thinks that would work out well. And I had met Pradyumna once before, so I said, "Okay, I'll come." So I went, Giriraj had just joined at that time. I remember he drove me to the airport. And I went to Columbus, and the day that I got there, the deities were found. They came back. So when I went up to see Prabhupada, he said, "The deities like the way you took care of them, therefore they have decided to return." So I got to do that service again, and he married Pradyumna and I a day or two later in Columbus. So I basically worked, you know, on Prabhupada's books. We had like the first composer machine. And Jai Dwaita, he used to call me Composer Ananda. Um, That was the first machine we had that you could type the books the way they looked, type the text as it would look in the book, with even margins on both sides. And that he had Prabhupada asked me and Shyamadasi, who was Hayagriva's wife, to go and learn the composing machine. We took some lessons to learn how to work it. And at that point, we were very involved. There was a lot of letters back and forth. Prabhupada wanted to make sure the work was going on. So he gave us specific hours to work to make sure that the books were all being typed very rapidly. So he gave, like, he said Arundhati should work from 7 to 10 and Shyamadasi from 10 to 1 and Arundhati from 1, something like that. Arundhati from 1 to 4 and 4 to 10. That might not be exactly right, but, you know, he wanted us to be constantly working on his books and composing the books. That's the most important, was the most important thing for him, to him. I think that was something that was in 1976 he was going to move to. Oh yeah, when he said that we could start traveling, just getting back to 1976, and he invited us on the traveling party, and constantly typing then, and I'm just thinking of another time when Prabhupada, I think sometimes when devotees had very, very strong desires, they were fulfilled, and that first very strong desire I had was just to be with Prabhupada. And then while we were traveling with Prabhupada, Palika was his cook in India. And before we traveled with him through Europe and Tehran and got to India. And so I was typing, and I was teaching my son, because he had said I could take a medal. So I was typing his books and teaching Ani how to read and write and all that. And somewhere along the way, I was thinking, oh, how wonderful it would be to cook for Prabhupada. I wish so much I could cook for him. I had cooked an offering, you know, like, once in a rare while, or maybe just a preparation. Anyhow, this was in my mind, and then like a week or two later, Palika got eczema on her hands, which she used to get every now and then, and Prabhupada didn't want her to cook while she had the eczema on her hands, so he said, train Arundhati up how to cook for me. I had already by that time learned how to cook. I couldn't cook a thing when I joined the movement. And going back to Boston in 1968, one time Devananda couldn't cook. He had to go somewhere, so he said I should do the cooking that day. I burnt everything. I did not know a clue about cooking. But, you know, gradually I learned, as so many people did. The devotees learned, did miraculous things because they were so inspired. There was so much love coming from Prabhupada. The devotees were so inspired that somehow they did miraculous things through his grace. And, you know, a small miraculous thing for me was that I learned how to cook. So anyhow, so I got to go for Prabhupada as well for, I guess, a few months altogether in India and different places, and had a lot of nice little intimate pastimes, you know, when I would bring them the prasadam, which were mostly positive. And I did get yelled at one time by Prabhupada, which I guess I'm lucky that it was only once, because I think some of the devotees that were closer to him often were chastised. But he probably knew I couldn't take it, so... anyhow, I don't want to extend this too long, so I'll just end by reading my offering this year, which was also in the form of an anagram. You know, I thought I'll do that again. He had liked it in 1976, so... this says Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai down the left-hand side. So sweet is the memory of your years on this earth. Remembering your infinite kindness to free us from repeated birth. In spite of our attachment to temporary joys and sorrow, loss and gain, and always hoping for a better tomorrow, and Maya keeping us enthralled in a life ultimately hollow, Prabhupada, you journeyed far to alleviate our pain. Rained upon us your message of what we could attain. Associated with us, your whole being animated with infectious joy by your divine connection to Govinda, the beautiful cowherd boy. Having the good fortune to meet you decades ago, under your feet taking shelter, and thus coming to know precious teachings of the Gita and chanting of Harinam, answering our questions, you bestowed the healing balm. Descended with utmost compassion from the highest realm above and showered upon us with unalloyed devotion, mercy, and love, Krishna Loka, the realm of Satchit Anand, inspiring us to dive deep within and beyond. Jagatguru, I admit that I am often running astray, and yet still I pray to serve you in some small or great way. Your love and mercy is inconceivable. I cannot comprehend. Always may my heart stay open to your grace, which has no beginning and no end. Thank you.
I guess I'll just say a few words, and I guess then we can get on with the rest of the program. Thinking when Jai Dwaita Maharaj was speaking, it would remind me of Krishna would come into the, when he came into the wrestling of Kamsa, people would see him in different ways. So it seems that if you approached Prabhupada with Upa Siddhanta, you would get a thunderbolt. But it seems that, and Prabhupada, you know, in that context, he was just so heavy. You know, Senapati Prabhupada, the general, they're all fools, and, you know. So sometimes, you know, people that are a little bit more ecumenical or liberal, you know, they're praying for just some kind of glimpse of liberality. Or so here's mine that I got this year from Pradyumna, right? You know, and it kind of gave me kind of like a joy. Hey, look, Prabhupada's broad, he's ecumenical, he's a little bit more liberal. And Pradyumna came to Prabhupada when they were looking for a principal of the Gurukula. And Pradyumna said, he mentioned two of the top scholars in Vrindavan who weren't even in the Gaudiya line. One may have been Dambarka, one may have been Vallabha. He said, what about Nisringavallabha Goswami? He was known as the top pandit and scholar. And then there was someone else, and Prabhupada said, that's a good idea. Why don't you go find them? Pajumda went to them. And they said, well, no, I don't think I want to. And then after that, then Prabhupada found one person to be in charge of the school. It was a Mayavadi. Dr. Sharma. Even when I met him, you know, way, way after, in Agra, and he said, the one thing I didn't understand with Prabhupada, you know, and then he went into Advaita Vedanta. So, you know, I like to see that the many facets of Prabhupada and then what really comes out here also, you know, it's one. Because there's different ways that people have presented Prabhupada here, but you get one thing, and it's this incredible bob of Prabhupada's affection, whether it's calling everybody fools or whether he's telling Arundhati that, you know, you could take your kid and educate him yourself, which is also out of the box what everybody thought, you know, you can only put your kid in the school. He also did that with Vamana. Remember Vamana, Dave? Mm-hmm. I think he also came to Prabhupada that, you know, he wasn't satisfied. So, you know, Prabhupada, you know, kind of surprises also, you know, in his independence. And I kind of think it's I was reading about Sridhar Maharaj when he said about, he was talking about Bhakti Siddhanta, and he was quoting this verse about Vyas, that Vyas may know or may not know. And it's a very, he may know or may not know. And what got there is that someone at that level, you know, it's not going completely through their intellectual process. Krishna's just dictating. Mm-hmm. You know, so they're not confined to any type of personality, any type of thing. They're dictating what they will say at a particular time. And therefore, I remember Borijan was talking in Govardhan retreat about Prabhupada that, you know, you could never tell really what he was going to say. But you knew you have to follow it and believe it. And I think the history of time, that's what I always like to see. I think it proves that Krishna was speaking through Prabhupada. Even if it wasn't to your kind of persuasion or mood or whatever, it kind of works out, you know, in the fact that, you know, somehow or other, despite how much many of us botched up enough to destroy any movement 1,000 times, that it keeps on going on with this incredible strength. You know, and now here, up here, it was so nice last night. You know, Janmashtami up in this place. Look at all the people coming, to Prabhupada, you know, coming to Prabhupada of different persuasions, different, and how many people are here interested in chanting Hare Krishna. You know, somehow or other, you know, it works. You know, Prabhupada's way, Prabhupada's potency, it may come through different people, but it kind of works, you know, and it works better, I think, than anything else, you know, because it's growing, but it doesn't compromise its principles, where other people may have to compromise to grow. And I think people, what they appreciate at Prabhupada is you're connected to the Vedas. You get some kind of philosophy that accommodates everything. We could say about anything, what it is. And the offering that I gave this year, who but Prabhupada could do this? If you were there, what the real image, what Kup Stubu was talking about, and I hope I can communicate it properly, is here were people in the audience that, you know, some people were 50, a lot of people 30, 25. They were the same age as the people who were sitting up there doing kirtan, Ananta, Achyuta, Gauravani, Janavi. But, you know, they, you couldn't even compare. It was like people being from a different planet. These people that were born in the movement, whether they're completely strict or not complete, there's some potency. There was some Shakti there. And people were just stunned
And I think the comment that Kasturba made, who Prabhupada could do this, is to carry on his legacy. That's the real potency. He carried on his legacy, and there were people that were, you know, they're dedicated to Prabhupada. Now your son is dedicated to Prabhupada. They have a certain affinity, you know, affinity. And there's a potency there, you know, and it's, and then that potency, I was taking notes, you know, of Prabhupada going to Russia, as Radhanath Swami said, spoke to one people, what potency? And then you came to me, just said, yes. You know, Prabhupada says, chant Hare Krishna. Wow, what a class. I say it, what big deal? When a pure devotee says it with conviction, chant Hare Krishna. And I was thinking, the way I became convinced fully, after so many years of kind of, and that time, you know, convinced means to move the ashram or not. There was no congregation. Prabhupada was not into the congregation. He wanted everybody inside. And I think, you know, I got a rasgulla from Prabhupada's hand. The bite corresponded with the conviction and the potency, you know, to give up attachments and go forward. So I thought the potency was there before, the potency's there now. And even Prabhupada talks today, and I'll finish with that. It's kind of an interesting one there. You know, it's fasted all day, then at 12 midnight, you know, I ate this big feast, and I do eat the big feast. And then I kind of woke up this morning and trying again, a little bit lost, even though the Bhav was there yesterday at the end. It was wonderful. So I'm looking for my beads, and I he's going to be embarrassed. And I asked Baladev, I said, from Trinidad, Baladev, you see my beads? And he said, Prabhupada said, you know, when one person was said to Prabhupada, where are my beads? He said, they're hanging on some door crying for you. So I said, oh, yeah, yes, Prabhupada. And then I looked at some doorknob around here, and there were my beads crying for me. So I'm saying, Prabhupada's potency kind of carries on. So I guess that's it. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So should we go to the Pushpanjali? And it's kind of getting late.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry if anybody else didn't speak, but I think we should go on to our schedule. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.